It is wild that nobody is talking about a team that is 27-2. Hello, everyone, and welcome on into the Pac-12 Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Rau, and thank you so much for joining in. And we're going to talk some Pac-12 today. And the new Pac-12 is just around the corner, July 2026. I'm not waiting around. That's why we have this podcast. Andy Patton of Locked On Zags joins me for this conversation because Gonzaga is not being talked about enough. Now, they get talked about every day over on his show, but we need to make sure they're being talked about more on a national stage. Not, they're currently ranked ninth in the country, but they're 27-2. It is absolutely insane. You hear about the Michigans, the Dukes, the Houstons, the Arizonas, but no one is talking about Gonzaga the way they should be talking about it. Do you feel like this team is being just slept on? I know there's some injury concerns. There's some other things that are popping up, but it doesn't feel like they're getting talked about enough, Andy.
There have been a lot of Gonzaga teams that have been one loss teams, two loss teams, three loss teams at this point in the season. And I definitely think that this is the least talked about team that has been in that conversation. Like the 2021 team was obviously undefeated at this time and they got a ton of press, but they had superstar Jalen Suggs on that team. This 2017 team that went to the national championship, they were talked about a ton as well. Part of it is that the two losses really do stand out for Gonzaga. One of them was the worst loss by the amount of points lost, that Michigan game, 40-point loss to definitely the best team that Gonzaga has played, obviously one of the best teams in the country. But when you get that opportunity on a national stage in a championship game of a new tournament and you, I mean, completely lay an egg, that's going to be notable. Never mind that Graham Ike was hurt in that game and that there was factor, you know, they had less time to prepare for that game. Like, I don't know that they'd beat Michigan on a neutral again, but they would definitely not lose by 40. But that is right. What a lot of people remember about this Gonzaga team. And then a lot of people woke up in the morning of February 8th and saw that they lost to a team that's outside the top 200 in KenPom and in the net in Portland. And while people are not paying attention to the fact that they have not lost any other game, those are the two things that people remember is, oh, Gonzaga couldn't beat, you know, the one good team they've played, which is not true, but that is how people think about it, and that they lost to a team that's worse than anybody else's, you know, loss in the country, which is accurate. I think the only other team that's in the top 10 of the net right now is with a quad three loss is UConn, and UConn's loss was to Creighton, which I would remind folks that Gonzaga beat by 27 points earlier this year. Right. But you know, Creighton is a better team than Portland. Like, there's no debate about that. So I think that Gonzaga is getting a little bit unfairly punished for their losses and not getting enough credit for the fact that they beat Arizona State on the road. They beat Alabama on a neutral floor. They beat UCLA. They beat Oregon and Oklahoma and Maryland and other decent teams. And of course, swept Santa Clara, have a win over St. Mary's. Like, they have a really good win equity and a lot of quality W's, but people are focused too much on the losses, which is why this team's not getting the love they should.
And add to the resume, right after that big Michigan loss, they crush Kentucky. 94-59, the game right after. And then right after the loss against Portland, they beat Oregon State by 20 points. So they bounce back really good. But I'm with you. The fact that they're not being discussed enough just because they have two losses on their plate, they're just not being ranked high enough. They're not being discussed enough. And it definitely needs to change over the next couple days. We'll see what happens where they fall in the seed lines. I'm going to get your thoughts on March Madness in just a second. There's two games left, and obviously one of them is against one of those teams you just lost to in Portland. And I want to get that your thoughts on that in just a second, because that feels like a revenge game. But before we get over there, I feel like the biggest elephant in the room right now when it comes to talking Gonzaga basketball is the status of will Braden Huff return. And you haven't had him since the beginning of January, and having him return would obviously be huge for the tournament if he is able to go. What is the latest on Braden Huff?
Yeah, it doesn't sound promising. Is the latest on Braden Huff? He's been out since like mid January. I think the Washington State game was the first game he did not play, and that was on the 15th. At the time, we were given a 4 to 8 week timeline, which 4 weeks would have been mid February, and 8 weeks would be basically Selection Sunday. And last time we heard from Mark Few, he said it's trending more towards the 8 week timeline. And that was about a week or so ago. And he basically said he's still on crutches. He hasn't put any weight on his knee. So to me, the idea of him ramping up to be able to play even by March Madness, you know, the first games are going to be like either 20th, 21st, 19th, I think, in March. I mean, if he's not walking yet, I have a hard time imagining him being able to play meaningful minutes by that time. I suppose it's possible, but They have effectively ruled him out for the rest of the regular season. They have ruled him out for the WCC tournament and have not ruled him out for the NCAA tournament yet. And I don't think they will, especially because it was a pretty big deal the committee announced publicly to everybody on Saturday that they bumped Texas Tech down a seed line because JT Toppin's injury, which I understand why they did that. But I also understand why Gonzaga is going to be like, well, we're not going to tell you until the last possible minute if Brayden Huff is going to play or not, because we don't want that to impact our seeding. But if I were a betting man on this, I suspect that Brayden Huff will not play again for Gonzaga this year, because I don't think I don't think it's worth the risk to return him for one, maybe two games and risk further injuring him. We don't know exactly the extent of the injury. We've just been given it's a left knee injury, and here's the timeline. So we don't exactly know what happened, what he did, what the recovery has looked like, but I would be fairly surprised if he played.
Oh, wild. Well, I mean, either way, looking at this, Gonzaga is still 19th in the country in points per game. They're just outside the top 30. They're 32nd in rebounds per game. They still find a way to put up points and to be able to get on the board, something that Huff was, I guess we'd say, one of the players definitely to rely on when it comes to those statistics. And they're still finding a way to be successful in that regard. Who's stepping up in his absence? And do you feel like that is something that can help in the long term? If Brayden Huff, let's just make this assumption on this podcast that he's not going to return this year, this is a team that's still 27-2 and has aspirations of winning a national championship. Can they do that with what they have on the bench replacing Huff?
It's going to take a Herculean effort from Graham Ek, and they've gotten that. I mean, Graham was the best player on this team even when Brayden Huff was healthy, but they were basically averaging the same amount of points per game. They were both around 17. Some games Graham would have 32 and Brayden would have 10. Some games would be flipped. And that was what was so valuable about those two players, is that you couldn't really double team Graham. You couldn't pack the paint in as well, because you had these two guys and they could pass the ball between each other. They could both step out and hit an outside shot, and it made them so difficult to defend. Now teams are just packing in the paint entirely and trying to force Graham Ek to get rid of the basketball. He went, I think, 7 games in a row, because he also missed 3 games with an ankle injury while Brayden Huff was out. And the fact that Gonzaga won all 3 of those games without their 2 leading scorers is incredibly impressive, and I don't think has gotten enough attention either. But then since Graham has returned, he's averaged like 25 points per game, 10 rebounds. I mean, he's been playing like a true All-American, and he'd been at Gonzaga for 2.5 years, had never had a 30-point game. He's had 3 of them in his last 8. Like, that just tells you how dominant he has been. But in terms of other players stepping up, Jalen Worley, who has been fantastic for Gonzaga all season long. He's a defensive specialist, but he's one of the most unique players that Gonzaga has ever had. He's playing the 4, playing the 5, yet he was basically a point guard at Florida State. He's 6'7". He's really big and strong. He's a great leaper. He has no outside shot, but he is an elite defender, a very good rebounder. He has also been dealing with an injury that he suffered in that game against Portland, and it has limited him recently. So Gonzaga has been really, really struggling to stay healthy this year. But one other name I would toss out there is freshman Davis Fogel. Fogel was a top 40 recruit nationally from Anacortes, Washington, played his senior year at Compass Prep High School and was kind of an unheralded prospect coming in for Gonzaga, and was playing mostly in garbage time. He put up huge numbers against like Southern Utah and North Florida and these teams outside the top 300 at KenPom. And it was great to see him have this confidence and kind of bravado as a freshman, but it was like, well, he's not really part of the rotation, and it doesn't look like he's going to be a part of the rotation. And then when Brayden Huff got hurt and they needed to kind of shift guys up to the power forward position, like Worley and Tyon Grant Foster, Fogel started playing more minutes of the 3, and he's been outstanding. He's a gifted scorer, just natural ability to put the ball in the net. He's grown tremendously as a decision maker. He's grown as a defender. He had 18 points in their most recent game against Pacific, a game that they struggled with pretty much the entire game. They struggled against San Francisco at home a few weeks ago, and he had 15-9 in that game. Like, he has been unbelievably valuable for Gonzaga as a playmaker, as an offensive player, as a shooter. He's gotten a tremendous ability to draw contact and get to the free throw line, which was really valuable in that Pacific game. If Gonzaga is going to make a run, and if they're going to make a run without Brayden Huff, it's going to be on the back of Graham Ek and Davis Fogel, and hopefully a healthier Jalen Worley.
Exciting stuff. And there's so much to discuss here when it comes to Gonzaga basketball. If you want even more, you go check out Locked On Zags with Andy Patton, because he covers it every single day. And hopefully he comes over here more on the Pac-12 Daily Podcast, like we are always doing right here every day. We're back, if you haven't noticed, and it's exciting stuff right here on this show. Next up that I want to ask you is what's next. And on Wednesday night here, you have a game that probably feels a lot like revenge. You're going to be playing those Portland Pilots, the one that beat you 87-80 to break that 15 game winning streak, to upset at that point number six in the country, Gonzaga. Now you face them on Wednesday night, the second to last game of the regular season before conference tournament play and before March Madness. How's this one feel? Do you feel like this is just a setup for them to just go and make a statement here, or do you just have to squeak by with a win?
I think it's going to be a statement win. I mean, this Portland team, they played an incredible game on that Wednesday on the 7th of February when they beat Gonzaga. Gonzaga came out very listless. I mean, Gonzaga led that game for 32 seconds. Like, it's truly remarkable what the Pilots were able to do. But this team, it hasn't turned into a like resurgent season for UP. They haven't backed that up by playing extremely well since then. And they're not a better team than Gonzaga. And I think that that's going to show up. I think that there was some scouting things, some things that UP was able to do effectively, and Gonzaga responded poorly in that game. They are not a good three-point shooting team, and yet they took 17 threes in the first half of that game. Now, recently, they have not been taking that many threes for entire games, and I think they just settled for too many outside shots because UP was packing the paint and Graham was being a little bit more deferential than he probably should have been, and he had alluded to that after the game. And so I think you're going to see they're going to pound the ball to Graham EK. He's going to go through the double teams. He's not going to let them force him to get rid of the basketball. And I think you're going to see the playmakers, you know, the Mario St. Superis, the Davis Fogels, other guys like that step up. It's at home for Gonzaga. They know that if they win this game, regardless of what happens in the season finale against St. Mary's, Gonzaga will be the number one seed in the WCC tournament regardless. So this is a big win for Gonzaga. You pick this one up, you beat them handily, and then you are feeling a lot less pressure in that St. Mary's game. You still want to win it because it's a rivalry game and it's the last time you're playing them in the conference, but it's not as much pressure in terms of like how it impacts you going into March in the WCC tournament. So this Portland game is certainly not one they can look ahead of, and certainly one that picking it up will make them feel a lot better going into the final days of the season.
And then finishing your regular season at St. Mary's before the tournament, let's just assume you go through and take care of business and head into March Madness, head into Selection Sunday as a two-loss team and a conference champion. Currently right now, ESPN Bracketology has you as the third seed in the West. That's currently where they have you sitting playing your first games in Portland. How does it get any better? Is there a chance for a two seed if you run that gauntlet, or is the three seed a comfortable position? Does it go even lower, as you mentioned, kind of like the Texas Tech situation? What's your thought process on March Madness? And then let me add one more caveat to that as well. You're going to try and get that streak back, the one that was lost last year, mm-hmm. The Sweet 16 thing being lost by Houston taking you out of it last year. Can you get back to the Sweet 16 in 2026?
Yeah, I think three seed feels very likely at this point, as likely as you can feel about where you're going to be on a seed line in late February. I think if Gonzaga runs the table, because if they do run the table at this point, they will get a quad one win against St. Mary's on the road, and then they will play very likely either St. Mary's or Santa Clara in the WCC championship game. That will be a quad one game regardless. At this point, Santa Clara is in the top 50 in the net, and I think they'll stay there. St. Mary's is in the top 30 in the net, so they'll definitely stay there. So two more quad one wins on Gonzaga's resume. They'd be 8-1 in quad one games. That's fantastic. They'd be, I think, 7-0 in quad two games, depending. They'd still have that quad three loss. And somewhat, I suppose, ironically, Portland right now is 227th, I think, in the net. If they fall below 240, Gonzaga's quad three loss to Portland would actually become a quad four loss, which would hurt their resume. And part of the irony is that if Gonzaga beats the absolute crap out of Portland tonight, that might actually hurt the Zags in some ways, in the sense that it could bump Portland a little bit farther down. So Gonzaga fans will root hard for Portland in every game they play besides tonight's game. But I think ultimately Gonzaga will land on the three line. I think a two seed is possible. I mean, we saw Kansas lose. We saw Illinois lose. We saw a bunch of other teams in that conversation, kind of in that 2-3 seed line, lose very recently, Iowa State being another one. So there could be some massacres that happen in the Big 12 tournament and the Big 10 tournament that could result in Gonzaga bumping up. But I think the path to a 2 seed requires every other game for Gonzaga has to be a win. There's zero doubt about that. And I still think it's going to require some other teams to fall just because of how bad that one quad three loss is for the Zags. But I think a four seed could be a possibility. I think if they win out, they should get a three. But I do think it's possible they would get dropped to a four, either because Gonzaga does announce that Braden Huff's not coming back, or because, you know, Florida and Texas Tech and a few other teams that are in that four seed conversation bump up. But ultimately, I project Gonzaga as a three seed. And as for the Sweet 16, they should get past a 14 seed regardless of the Braden Huff status. But at that point, the six seed teams, you know, the Louisvilles, the North Carolinas, the other teams that are kind of in that six seed range, BYU, Wisconsin, whomever, most of them worry me. For a Gonzaga team, yeah, without Braden Huff, all four of those teams, I think, could beat Gonzaga. On a neutral, you played them 10 times, I think they'd win probably five or six of those games. So it'd be really, really tight. With Braden Huff, I think Gonzaga advances to the Sweet 16. I think they're an Elite Eight, potentially Final Four team. But without him, I'm not sure. I mean, the wins that they've picked up without Braden Huff have been solid, but none of them have been... They haven't played a team on that caliber. St. Mary's is the best team they've played in Santa Clara. And those teams are good teams, but they're like 9 seed, 10 seed, 11 seeds. So I'm skeptical that Gonzaga will make the Sweet 16 without Braden Huff. I certainly think they are capable of it, but it feels like it's going to require a really big effort from somebody.
Final year of the West Coast Conference for Gonzaga before heading over to the Pac-12. Looking at this bracketology, they're going to say there's three teams that make it into the West Coast Conference. You mentioned when it comes to St. Mary's and Santa Clara, other than Gonzaga. That doesn't seem normal. It doesn't seem like there's usually three teams making the tournament. So this is one of the tougher years than we've seen inside this conference.
Yeah, it's been, I think it was 5 years ago that San Francisco made it with Gonzaga and St. Mary's. That San Francisco team was coached by Todd Golden, who, of course, just won a national championship for Florida. Other than that, I think there was 1 year where BYU made it with Gonzaga and St. Mary's, but most of the time, this hasn't happened. I mean, since before that, I think it's been decades, like truly been decades since it happened. It is extremely rare for three teams to make it from this league. They all deserve it. I will be frustrated if Santa Clara, I mean, unless they shoot themselves in the foot and lose a bad game here, I think Santa Clara will deserve to make it in. I think St. Mary's deserves to make it in. I do think that both of them are like a bad loss away from floating onto the bubble. And unfortunately, I think if a team's going to get left off on the bubble, it's probably going to be a mid-major team. But I think all three of these teams certainly deserve to be in the tournament, and I'm excited to see if they all are able to make it and maybe even make some noise in March.
Graham Ike needs to be red hot in this tournament if they want Gonzaga to get back to the Sweet 16. Hopefully Braden Huff comes back, but it doesn't seem like that's likable in this situation. Hopefully it does change, because I would love to see Ike and Huff get themselves maybe to the Elite Eight, maybe in the Final Four. That would be absolutely insane. Andy Patton of Locked On Zags, where can everyone find your work?
Locked On Zags, you find it wherever you find podcasts, wherever you're listening to this show. You can find it on YouTube as well. You can follow me on social media, Andy Patton CBB. That's where you're going to find all of my work, my written work, my podcast work, video clips, all that good stuff.
Love it. Fantastic. Thank you so much for watching or listening the Pac-12 Daily Podcast. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Take care.